step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They called me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. We're going to talk about something that is sometimes a third rail in conversation for a lot of people. It's something that makes a lot of Americans uncomfortable. It's something a lot of people like to ignore. It's the interaction between cops and gangs, and it's something that might surprise a lot of people in the audience today. But before we get into any of that, quick correction corner and a thank you for our longtime conspiracy realist who helped keep us on the true path here. In our Eggspiracy episode, we were talking about mRNA, misspoke. That should be messenger RNA, not modified RNA. It's an important distinction, but thankfully, the conspiracy theories we mentioned in relation to eggs are exactly as we described. Also, thanks to everybody who wrote in with follow-ups on this. Winter 2022 avian flu epidemic. I think we'll get to it in a listener mail segment in the future, but please stay tuned. If you haven't listened yet, check out the Eggspiracy episode. I think we all had a lot of fun on that one.
Did you see the record egg profits?
Yes,
the similar to the petroleum industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exxon Mobil's cleaning up everything but the environment. You know what I mean?
You know, it kind of reminds me of this old Tim and Eric sketch with Steve Sharippa from The Sopranos, where it's like an infomercial for like this kit that you can get where it'll allow you to lay eggs. And like, the line is like, with the price of eggs going through the effing roof, he's like, now I can pass a dozen eggs through my rear.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and I think we may have mentioned this, or maybe we're talking off air, but in other parts of the world, egg shortage, egg price gouging. Totally not a thing. Matter of fact, I got some eggs right here. I was going to film a video about it, but I think you guys got to it first. Check that out on Instagram and social media.
Yeah, and we got to talk to a real life egg farmer, a chicken dad, I think is what you referred to him as, Matt.
Yeah, he's an
while
egg
I cower in the background, I am genuinely, we all know that I'm scared of chickens, but I've faced my fear to a degree. But he said there was a period where the hens weren't laying eggs like they used to. But once they were done molting, he said the egg yield was better than ever. So I think we kind of nailed it, at least in terms of our guesses, that definitely some conditions, whether it be environmental or just natural processes that, that animals go through, that could account for some of this, and not nearly what you know, some folks are making it out to be in terms of some sort of, you know, nefarious dealings.
So that is our correction corner, and please check out the episode. Always feel free to send us clarifications, your takes, your responses, because, you know, honestly, folks, a lot of other podcasts might not welcome that stuff, but we very much do, because we prefer the truth unvarnished. And, you know, you could say we're all one big family here, maybe even a gang. Hey, that's what you call a segue. We talked about gangs before. What was the most recent gang episode we talked about? Was it MS-13?
That's what I was thinking. I was going to say, was it MI5? No, that's not the same thing.
I mean,
that's a spy. Well, that's a good point, Ben. You could argue that a lot of government agencies are in and of themselves somewhat clandestine, gang-like entities.
Or within them have groups that function as one unit, yeah, as a separate unit, right?
Yeah, the special boys, the special class.
As it turns out, is the name of a gang, the special boys. Those are the,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, gang names can get kind of silly if you don't think about what they do. Yeah, but there's also this thing with gangs. Saying something is a gang is like saying an organization is a cult. In some ways, they come in all shapes and sizes. It can be an umbrella term. There are gangs all across the planet. It doesn't matter where you live. It doesn't matter how big or how small your community is. There are cliques, you know, and some of those cliques do gang-like things. Like fascism, you could almost, I would posit, define gangs by their tactics applied rather than their specific ideology. Right. Because if you look at ideology, there are a lot of gangs who have absolutely nothing in common. They're gangs who are founded just to kill other gangs. It's wild out there.
And there is a list, I believe, that's maintained by a government agency of known gangs. And remember that? I think the FBI. Remember that moment when the Juggalos got on that list? Mm-hmm. It caused a real uproar within the ICP community.
Well, because there were gang-like activities occurring within that larger group, right? Which is,
it's true.
It's tough to make the distinction, but that's something we kind of have to do. The entirety of a group, generally, when it's an organized system like that, isn't a full gang. But then inside there, you got pockets.
Right. Yeah. And I want to give, I never thought I would end up saying this on air.
Give props to
younger me.
ICP.
Yeah. Younger me would be so baffled by this. Props to ICP. I saw a recent interview where I think it was Shaggy Too Dope. Was saying that he felt terrible about using like homophobic slang in past ICP songs. And he said that goes against everything about the inclusiveness that we have tried to build in the global Juggalo community. Nice. And it hit me, and I was like, what a nice guy.
That's,
and
then
I was
like, touching.
There's a global Juggalo community.
Oh, yeah.
And then I found, I know. And they're also in the Train Kid community too. So, speaking of Train Kids and off the grid cultures, check out City of the Rails, I believe it's called, produced by our pal Julian Weller. Moving on, though, you know, we've got, I think all of us have some pretty intense opinions and perspectives about this idea of gangs. We've just outlined some of the tricky things there. But for a lot of people, there's one entity that would probably not be a gang, or probably not be affiliated in a friendly way with gangs, at least in the public mind, and that is law enforcement. The natural enemy of the gang is law enforcement, just like the mongoose is the natural enemy of the cobra. Or so it would seem. Here are the facts. Nobody knows when gangs got to the U.S. Nobody knows, because you can't really define what makes a gang ideologically. It's got to be the tactics. So were the people at the Boston Tea Party, were they a gang? they were doing some gangland stuff, you know?
Well, and like, what's the distinction between a gang and a mob
or a mob
or a terrorist organization? It's almost like that's a hierarchy, because a mob is something that kind of just springs up with maybe minor amounts of planning, but it doesn't have like bylaws and like, you know, meets regularly. It's really more of like a temporary gang kind of, right? So I would argue, but Boston Tea Party definitely had some serious planning that went into it. To your point, Matt, it is a distinction that's important to make, but one that can often be a little blurry.
I think, well, you guys correct me if I'm wrong here. I think generally a gang is a group of people that conspire to profit from some illegal activity, right? So like, there's generally a profit motive associated with a gang.
Well, ultimately, right, when it evolves, but we have to remember in the early days of we have to remember the systemic structures that force people into gangs. So like with the MS-13 example, they were banding together so that they did not get victimized themselves. So I would say survival first and then profit. But, you know, profit and survival, they're very closely linked, because people want to survive. But obviously, given the choice, you would prefer not to survive poor. Still, I think we're going to be going back and forth over this definition of gangs for a while. You can see all kinds of official documentation about it in the world of criminal justice, academic world of criminology, and so on. But they don't, I think a lot of them, if they're being honest, acknowledge acknowledge the liminal space of the definition, whatever. It's tough to nail down when gangs actually emerged in the U.S. But we do know this. To your earlier point, Noel, the FBI does try to keep track and currently estimates that in the U.S. and U.S. territories and all that jazz, there are around 33,000 active violent street gangs or motorcycle gangs and prison gangs in the U.S. And when we see gangs here, we're not talking about like the Apple Dumpling Gang. These aren't kids knocking
little
down
scamps.
Yeah, they're not knocking down mailboxes, throwing toilet paper on Halloween or eggs. That's like a brand
newly
expensive crime.
Staging bullfrog races.
Yeah, this is like it's like a felony to throw eggs now, right? Law enforcement and gangs have always officially been nemeses, but as we've talked about previously, anybody who's seen The Wire, right, you know that you become familiar with your regulars, right? Think of, you could almost think of like some cops with a beat as bartenders who have regular customers. It's just their customers are people who regularly commit street level crime. So they start to know, you know, Shaky Oats or whatever the guy's going by. And we know that that familiarity can be a kind of leverage. Even the feds have cooperated with the mob before to try to like kill Castro, or we talked about this on Ridiculous History, wage a campaign in Italy in World War II. But I don't know, man. That's the question. Okay, so Miles and Jack over at Daily Zeitgeist taught me a great word, copaganda.
So propaganda with police?
I mean, it's just, what is it? Just the idea of like creating an image for the police that is not necessarily based on reality?
Like Law and Order. Like,
yeah.
Oh. You
know? That makes perfect. Yeah.
Cops. And,
that's awesome.
I've heard that though, that the police love Law and Order because it portrays them in such a positive light as truly being the good guys. And then also the creators are like, yeah, we base this on the real stories and this is really how it's done. But they don't really show any of the, you know, kind of more seedy underbelly.
They don't really show defense attorneys
also
as
true.
Agents of the people. They're always kind of depicted as smarmy jerks, and someone's like, and you know, there's a detective who's trying really hard, or a DA, and they're saying, look, we've got your guy dead to rights. We have all the evidence. And they're like, well, let's see if you can prove it. Copaganda means, you know, exactly what we're describing, trying to make the police look good, brushing over serious issues, but even in that stuff, you see things that are based in fact, like the idea of informants.
Yeah. Well, and there are also television shows like the recent We Own This City that show the opposite side, right? So it does exist, but the propaganda, as you put it, is there too. It's interesting how the popular media kind of like tries to have all of it together at once. But I guess it's what you choose to put into your head maybe forms your opinion on the subject.
True. Yeah. As in all things, right? And so we know that if you put aside all the Hollywood stuff, there are a couple of different paths where the mongoose and the cobra meet here. I'll put down that comparison later. I don't know if it's working. So, you know, you got the official CI, right? Confidential informant, not necessarily a criminal. It's anybody who provides useful, credible information. But then you've got that off the books kind of transactional thing. Hey, Shaky Oats or whatever, you know, I could take you into the station, or you could just tell me where you got the blow, you know, or the heroin or whatever. That kind of stuff happens. And sometimes it's just people doing favors for each other. You know, despite their official positions, people can and do build familiarity. You can get involved in quid pro quos, but everybody still knows gangs are a problem. And that's where we lead to some of the stuff that you foreshadowed just a few minutes ago, Matt, the idea of these kind of specific units, this like the special boys. One of the big ones are anti-gang units. The more dressed up term for them is gang intelligence units, or GIUs. Because you add intelligence to something to make it sound smarter. Just like a lot of criminals wear glasses when they go into court. He couldn't have done that. Look at those spectacles.
I'm kind of picturing this being, to some degree, what's portrayed in the movie Training Day, where Denzel Washington's character is, obviously he's like a crooked cop, but his cover story is that he is essentially, you know, in with these gangs as a means of, you know, getting information and being embedded and kind of having, you know, the word on the street and all of that.
Well, I mean, there are undercover officers in most major cities and in some small towns. There are undercover officers right now on the street operating and gaining intelligence, right, on what's happening on the street level. But there are also these anti-gang units, which are specialty units of police officers that crack down on often gang activity. Sometimes just it's like drug enforcement kind of thing, which those two go together often hand in hand. And there's other stuff like violent crime units that are just specialty units that are supposed to respond maybe more aggressively and swiftly than other units within a police department.
Yeah, that they would be specifically trained or tasked with doing the police work in known high crime areas. So someone would have probably a table of stats for a few years or a few months and say, this is where we put our response unit. And they might not call them head crackers, but this is where we put people who are going to have more training or more familiarity with escalation tactics and with responding to violence from civilians. This happens when fear of gangs rises at different points in history, and it's pretty cyclical. The National Gang Intelligence Center wasn't created by the FBI until 2005, but these task forces, or something like them, have been around for a long, long time. They were used to break strikes, right? In the days of the Depression, in the days of Joe Hill and other times, you know, the times that your history textbooks ignore these days. The very first anti-gang unit, specifically anti-gang, is 1967 in Chicago. It is specifically to target people of color. It's targeting black street gangs. More and more of these units, or some derivation of them, come up in the 1990s. And a lot of it happens, you know, during the Clinton administration, there was this huge acceleration in the militarization of police. And part of it was based on studies. Like, there was this federal study that said, okay, we got 3,440 different law enforcement agencies to report to us. And of them, more than half say that a lot of their criminal issues are coming from youth gangs. So everybody said gangs are a problem, and they just didn't know exactly how to deal with it. So they decided to respond with lots of money and lots of violence. And that's how you get things like, I think that's how you get a lot of those specialized units, right? Because we have to remember that in the 60s, some of those things Chicago was calling gangs were just activist groups who were not committing terrorism. You know, they weren't shaking down the moms and pops or dealing drugs. They were fighting for more equality in the United States. And Chicago PD said, nah.
Well, some of them were that. But then there were also violent, dangerous street gangs. So it's like, you know, it all existed, but you can't hit every problem with a hammer, right? And that's kind of what these groups were, at least in my mind. It makes me think about Goody Mob's Dirty South. And I know you guys are familiar with that song. One of the first lines in there is about how Clinton is supplying kilos of drugs to one of the guys so that he can turn a profit. So Clinton can turn a profit, you know, by via this guy's work. And it's also when they mention Red Dogs, the unit in Atlanta, mm-hmm. the specialty anti-gang unit.
They were in the news recently, right? Just for like highly aggressive tactics.
Well, they're in the news as a comparison that we're going to get to in this episode in a little bit. But it stood for Run Every Drug Dealer Out of Georgia, and it's something that got shut down in 2011. So, yeah, it was in the news, but only as a comparison.
And they were also just, I love that you're pointing out Goody Mob there, because they were also deploying the same tactics gangs use
yes.
when they hit a rival drug spot.
Like a stash house. Like mm-hmm. same thing.
Yeah. And this isn't pretty, of course, if you're being objective, why are those tactics deployed by gangs and folks who are supposed to be watching gangs? It's because those tactics work, just like assassination. That's the reason no government is going to ever take assassination or targeted killing off the table.
Until you bust open the door of the wrong house and you shoot a 92-year-old woman mm-hmm. five times and she dies, and then your right. unit gets disbanded.
Right. Your unit gets disbanded, and then other people in the world of law enforcement who are not going extremist, other people who are just trying to do their jobs, they're the ones who deal with the consequences there. And the like in the case of Red Dog, which we're quite close to living in Atlanta at the time, in the case of Red Dog, there aren't a lot of consequences. That's another difference. Anyway, we see that the lines get blurred in a very uncomfortable Robin Thicke way. For diehard supporters of conventional policing, you know, you'll hear everybody again agreeing there's a problem. There's a problem with gangs, right? And then there's a problem with the power and lack of oversight given to law enforcement that's supposed to fight back against these gangs. For a lot of diehard supporters of conventional police work in the U.S., the answer is stuff like more funding, more oversight, and more gang intelligence units, more task force initiatives, and so on. But these are still incredibly controversial. And history has proven that innocent people inevitably get caught up in the process. And corruption inevitably seems to come into play. I'm talking about the ongoing case regarding the murder of an activist in Atlanta, in Cop City, right? In the Atlanta forest. And to add all this together, there's another problem, a noxious conspiratorial cherry on top of this extraordinarily dangerous Sunday, a series of real-life conspiracies. What happens when the law says, hey, let's start a gang of our own?
Well, we'll tell you after a quick word from our sponsor.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring. Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's where it gets crazy. We don't always get to say this, but yes, the conspiracy is true. The conspiracies are true. Your local law enforcement, don't want to paint with a broad brush. We can't speak on them specifically, but local law enforcement in the United States is riddled with gangs on the inside.
Yeah. And well, let's make the distinction right now, Ben. Are we saying there's a unit of the Bloods that infiltrated a police department, or that the police department or sheriff's office formed a gang within it?
Oh, kind of both. Let's focus on the latter, because and we can, you know what? Yeah, let's go ahead and get that out of the way. That's an important distinction. So we know that we're talking about infiltration versus what we could call maybe homegrown. So existing gangs infiltrating aspects of law enforcement and the legal system, usually what they're going to be doing is trying to get into related parts of the legal system. You want to control prison guards, right? That's a way you can get contraband into the system. That's how you can help cover up crimes like retribution murders or different rackets. You could get somebody in the courtroom aspects of it too. I could get you some favors, but yeah, law enforcement, if you could get them, that would be great. And, you know, there's so many fictional crime dramas about just that, right? Like, that's a big spoiler alert. That's a big plot point of The Departed, isn't it? That we've got our boy on the inside. Who wouldn't want that? Now, I don't know how often that really happens, though.
Yeah, and minor spoilers for a probably 15-year-old movie. It turns out that the big bad of the movie, Jack Nicholson's character, is also an informant on the payroll, and essentially acting in his own best interest while also reporting to higher ups, like I think to the FBI. So it's very complicated, because you've got folks that are trying to infiltrate his organization to get to him, but all the while he's actually reporting to somebody even further up the chain.
Mm-hmm. It's the Spider-Man meme again, right? You're an informant? Wait. So if we're saying we've already probably ruffled some feathers here, right, by saying, yes, the conspiracies are true. There are gangs in law enforcement. They are homegrown, and they're doing gang stuff.
And, you know, okay, let's take the opposite. Let's devil's advocate, like we talked about in our skepticism episodes. Okay, why are we saying that? Couldn't you just say, hey, what if it's a club of coworkers hanging out, right? If they're not doing anything illegal, isn't that their business, right? They're public servants, but if they're not at work, isn't it just their private lives?
Well, there's a very big difference, I think, between hanging out at a local dive bar after work and getting a drink or something, you know, with your friends from your work versus carrying out illegal activities after work, you know, where you're all in the know, you all know what you're doing, and you've got each other's backs to prevent anyone from getting in trouble.
And you know that if there's something that goes sideways, you can probably count on your bosses to help, you know, to help smooth things over, right? And pretty soon there won't even be a crack in the wall where you were exposed.
That's a really good point. The thin blue line, which is, you know, a thing that some people debate, but I don't know why. It feels like loyalty is so highly important in law enforcement that, you know, that kind of protection is often likely going to be offered to someone within the organization, right? Not necessarily to cover up major illegal things, because we've seen examples where those major illegal things get outed at some point. The question is it outed? Is it talked about? Is it prosecuted? Only at some, when some threshold is met where it doesn't benefit the entire force anymore. I don't know.
Why does everybody hate internal affairs?
Yeah.
Right. And like, what if you're not doing anything wrong? These are important questions. I mean, if we're waxing poetic a bit, then there's almost something like Heart of Darkness, Colonel Kurtz, about it, about the worst extremes. The idea that in hunting monsters, some members of the law adopted too many of the same tactics. They drank too deeply from the same cup and became monsters themselves.
Rust cold. I mean, it's
right. Yeah, there we go. And some of the same groups that are meant to combat gang activity have formed gangs of their own. Honestly, we're talking about this just a little bit off air. There are too many examples to cover in a single episode here, which shows you the scope of the problem. There's too much stuff going on, right? So we can look maybe at some specific examples, knowing this is just the surface of some very deep water, and then we can extrapolate from there some very troubling things about other conspiracies that we may not know about today. Let's start in Los Angeles, you know. Let's specifically start with some fantastic work by a journalist named Cerise Castle over at Knock LA.
So as we look into all of this together, we want to make sure that everyone thinks about the kinds of tactics that you may see deployed where you live, including stuff like the officers of Scorpion sending photos via text after beating Tyree Nichols to death. Castle, as you mentioned, Ben, in Knock LA, did a 15-part series that dives into gangs existing within the LA County Sheriff's Department, which is the largest department of its kind in the entire United States. We know Los Angeles is a massive metro area. And what Castle found was beyond brutal.
Yeah. So at least, so Castle's investigation, like you said, Noel, it's a long read. This comes out in March 2021. So it's a couple of years old now, almost 2 years old. But it's fantastic reporting, and it's incredibly disturbing. Castle finds that at least 19 people have died at the hands of these gangs. And all these gang members are employed by the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. And despite all those deaths, there had at that point been no real internal investigation, no policy changes, nothing. Thankfully, this has changed a little bit. Maybe we'll get to it. Also, by the way, all of these 19 murder victims were non-white males. And if you go into Castle points this out in the reporting too, if you go into the history of the sheriff's department there, even on their own website, they say, okay, things were kind of crazy in the beginning when we first started out. You know, we might not have had uniforms. Not everybody knew what was going on, but we tried our best. And now we're way better. They also knew about gangs inside the sheriff's department way before they told the public. They knew about it more than 50 years ago. It is, beat me here, Paul, it's crazy.
Yeah. It doesn't sound real to me. This sounds like a fiction story you'd watch on HBO. So in 1970, there's a journalist that gets killed. Person's name is Ruben Salazar. It's like a video game. That's why this is what it is. It's a video game, and you find this clue or whatever that leads you to the next thing. There's a memo from 3 years later. And on this memo, we see a printed description of this group called, it's a weird name, quote, Little Devils.
Which is kind of Apple Dumpling Gang, right? If a member of the Little Devils hadn't been the person who threw the tear gas can that killed Ruben Salazar when he and his folks were inside this store cafe area, drinking a beer during this massive public protest. But yeah, they targeted him. They specifically went in there. You could say detained, but I would say they went in there to kill him.
Yeah. So the question is, who are these little devils?
Right. Who are these little devils? Is that just a weird phrase that the author of this memorandum writes? No, it's the name of a gang, and they've revealed it. The captain at the time, R.D. Campbell, drew up a list of known members of this gang, Little Devils. Listed 47 people, almost 50 deep, this gang. And each of these people had a specific red devil tattoo. And right now in 2023, more than 50 years later, we don't know whether anybody was disciplined at all. We know no one was charged, including the guy who killed Salazar.
Jeez. But we do know it was brought to the public's attention, right? There, I mean, it was at least printed somewhere. Hey, there's a gang. Was it? I don't know. I didn't see that it was like actually printed in a newspaper or something.
I think, well, the problem is that a lot of these stories of abuse from these gangs using the protection of the legal system, a lot of this abuse never makes it to the news then or today, you know? So it's something that it's kind of like a street knowledge, right? Like if you live in the wrong neighborhood, you know very well who these people are and you know that they are organized, but you also know a reporter or another cop isn't going to pay attention to you, right? And if it gets back to those guys, then they also know where you live, right? They know where your kids go to school. They know what time your mom comes home or your spouse. So it gets dangerous really quickly, which again, these are some of the same tactics that out and out criminal gangs use. The public exposure of the devils then doesn't do a lot to stop the development of these tumors in the system. Others keep developing, and members of these gangs rise through the ranks. They find themselves in positions of power. You know what I mean? And you start having to ask yourself, well, if somebody is the deputy and they used to be, you know, the leader of the 3000 Boys, which is a real LASD gang name. We'll get to the gang names in a second. Then are they going to crack down on their own people? It's very rare for folks to do that, which is why whistleblowers become a genre all their own.
Well, you know, them boys do get up to some trouble, but dadgummit, they're effective at their jobs.
Exactly. You know, if he was that bad, why would his barbecues be so much fun?
Or why would his arrest rate, you know, be so good or whatever?
He's just some really metric good at that his helps job. The
department.
Yeah, exactly. You know, some have described him as a violent man, but I think of him as an artist.
He's just an little artist devil.
He's a little devil. He's a scamp, isn't he? I think we're channeling True Detective season one pretty hard right here, you know? But we should talk about whistleblowers, because that's how a lot of this news comes out. It comes out through former employees. One in particular, a guy named Art Gonzalez, who gives a firsthand look at gang culture in the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. And it's not good.
Yeah. Gonzalez essentially says that gang culture is deeply ingrained within law enforcement, specifically in Los Angeles and in that area, the greater area of Los Angeles. And he's saying what we're basically saying here. It's actively, maybe not assisted, maybe just enabled is a good word to use, by the higher ups, because it's almost like a known thing. The closer knit my officers are, if you're somebody at the top levels of one of these law enforcement agencies, the closer knit my folks are, the more effective they're going to be at their jobs, the more they're going to have each other's backs. It's kind of disturbing to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, well, I mean, you're also in a really, really heavy psychological situation. You have to trust someone that you're not related to biologically with your life. And that has a huge impact on the human mind. You know, Gonzalez talks about how these folks have all the hallmarks of the stuff you imagine gangs doing. We mentioned tattoos, their initiation rites. You know what I mean? Get beat in, get beat out. Maybe you have to kill someone. Maybe you have to do a specific sort of thing. And then, you know, they also have a lot of behind the scenes, like consigliere influence on the day-to-day activities of the department. The leaders of, or the higher ups in the gang system, which is like a shadow command structure, right? The higher ups are called shot callers, and they're shot keepers, excuse me. And they're the ones who are able to decide things like who gets assigned where, right? Or, you know, who is up for a promotion, things like that.
Yeah, it really does make me think back to that David Simon series, you know, We Own the City. I haven't finished it, but it, you know, the idea of like these almost like a rip and run kind of drug raids that are, you know, disguised as kind of like, you know, a seizure, but it ultimately is just kind of like one gang robbing from another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then think like, okay, so here's another example of just how corrupt the situation became. Gonzalez has a crisis of faith, right? And decides to do the right thing, even though it means, he knows it means to some of his colleagues crossing that thin blue line. And he calls a secret whistleblower hotline. These have become very popular in a lot of large organizations. You know, to be candid, our parent company has a secret whistleblower hotline that I suppose is for people who make a lot more money than we do. But so he calls this whistleblower hotline, and his identity is leaked in less than 24 hours to the entirety of his coworkers. Someone scrawls a rat on his locker. The retaliation begins. So he made a heavy sacrifice. And because this one guy decided to do the right thing, he got punished, but he brought other people down the right path. And somewhere like a little less than a dozen or so folks followed in his footsteps. Law enforcement coming out and saying, yeah, we can confirm this gang activity. And it includes criminal activity. There are thousands of people in the LASD, and other police departments have suffered from corruption, other police gangs have existed in other places, obviously. New Orleans, right, had some going pretty deep. But Los Angeles Sheriff's Department seems to be the most riddled. And we're not basing this on just one piece of admittedly amazing reporting. There are other reporters who have talked about this, as well as academics. This conspiracy is confirmed.
Yes. Yes, it is. I just want to mention something that I think is tangential to this, but it is also important. In the 1990s, Los Angeles Police Department, so not the Sheriff's Department, but the police department had one of these red dog like units that was functioning out there in Los Angeles. It was the LAPD Rampart Division's Crash Unit. So CRASH, which, by the way, stood for Community Resources Against Street Hoodlums. Isn't that nice? So this was one of these anti-gang, anti-drug, anti-violence units that was functioning pretty much in the way we're describing here as a gang. It wasn't necessarily a gang in the same way, with specific tattoos, with specific, you know, gang signs and other things like that. But that unit itself, the majority of its members ended up getting caught up in an internal investigation that got most of them in big trouble. You could read all about this. You should read about it. And I think we should do a whole episode on the Crash Unit, because they did everything from, guys, they were robbing banks. They at least robbed one bank to aid their...
I mean, you get in situations, yeah.
Sure, but they robbed one bank to aid their criminal, their other criminal activities. It was nuts.
I've got to admit that my favorite response for a while, I'll retire it because I know I'm overusing it, is to just say, well, you get in situations to many things. It's true, but that's not the same thing as saying police should rob banks.
Well, just exactly.
Be very clear on that one.
But I will say, at least to my understanding, and maybe I'm way off base on this, the reason why this group started doing so many illegal activities, I think, stems from their directive. It's not really their directive. Maybe it's their internal directive, where they believe their mission was. And that was literally, quote, arrest gang members by any means necessary. Which led, you know, a slippery slope to like, oh, well, we can, you know, maybe we, if we have to perjure ourselves on the stand just to make sure this person that we know did bad things goes away, maybe we'll do it. Oh, if we have to plant evidence on somebody, maybe we'll do it, you know, down the line.
Greater good argument, mm-hmm. All every way, like every step of the way. Yeah. And this is dangerous. And this again is an important ongoing conspiracy. And the ongoing part is the part that should bother you the most, folks. I suggest we pause for a word from our sponsor, and then we return with some things from the present day.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
the war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we've returned. We mentioned some of the reporting here. In addition to Castle's work, there's a great piece by Andrew Buncombe writing for The Guardian in 2021. And in this piece, we see confirmation about the extent of gang activity within the sheriff's department, as well as learning a little bit more about the culture of these things, of these organizations. You can see there an example of the individual tattoos. There's one that kind of looks like a skeleton with a machine gun and something that's either a pith helmet or maybe a German World War II era helmet. It's not a cuddly look.
No.
But it does identify this person as a member of a gang called the Executioners.
Eesh. And, you know, it ranges. These kinds of tattoos and symbols range. Like, skeletons are very popular. And bones, it's very popular. A lot of the pirate symbols are popular. But, you know, you've also got things like numbers. You'll just see, like, a random number. Oh, wait, those numbers together just mean your gang? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and it's specifically Kalashnikov. Yeah. Sorry, folks.
Oh, it's definitely an AK.
Yeah. And they do have the 28 written there. These are the Compton Executioners. And a lot of their activities mirror prison gangs. I still think we haven't done an episode on the South African prison gangs. We might have to, but it needs a disclaimer for sure. Anyway, these journalists, their work is also supported by academics like Sean Kennedy at the Loyola Law School Center for Juvenile Law and Policy. He was able to trace the existence of at least 18 police gangs in LA alone back to the 70s. And they've got names that we should probably round robin. They've got names like the Bandidos, the Buffalo Soldiers, the Cavemen,
the Cowboys, the Grim Reapers, the Jump Out Boys, my personal favorite. Yeah, it's like, I gotcha. Hey, spooked ya.
That's a really scary thing. I was watching videos on the Red Dog unit here in Atlanta, and just the tactic of being in cars waiting for something to happen, then all of these police jump out of cars at one time, like unmarked cars, and just chase people down the street. It's terrifying. We've also got the Pirates, the Posse, and the Rattlesnakes.
Mm-hmm. The Regulators, the Spartans, the Tasmanian Devils.
The 3,000 boys. The 2,000 boys.
Not quite as impressive.
Which
as the 3,
came first,
boys.
I wonder. Yeah, you know, like, I hope it was clear. The 3,000 and the 2,000 boys were saying, hey, let's be reasonable. 3,000 is a lot.
That's like a block, right? Like the 3,000.
Of course. That's exactly. I'm sure that's exactly right. Let's see. The Vikings. The Wayside Whiteys. And how could we forget about our pals, the Executioners, who have definitely been, you know, in the news of late.
Yeah, there's a real connotation there with that name. Rattlesnake might bite you. Dangerous, venomous. Executioner, well, they only do one thing.
Right. And we also know the provenance of some of these names. For example, the Cavemen gang comes from...
their awesome beards.
It comes from a place, I think they're more mustache crowd.
Oh, okay.
You know, all facial hair, right? But the law enforcement loves mustaches. It's weird. Anyway, but the it comes from a room where male law enforcement guys would rest before they had to go testify in court. And people start calling it the cave. And then they start calling it the Cavemen. And then, of course, if you are called to court a lot of pretty often because you're pushing the line, then you become a caveman. And now we're a gang and we know each other. So that's one example of how this stuff evolves. The big difference between these groups and out-and-out criminal gangs is that law enforcement gangs have a much more robust ability to cover their tracks, to avoid accountability, right? In short, it is tough to arrest the people who themselves arrest people, who watches the watchman, and so on. And without accountability, these issues continue to metastasize like the cancer that they truly are. The public knows about this. You see politicians in Los Angeles saying, hey, before they found out I was in politics, I was terrified because, you know, like 9 sheriff cars rolled up on me insisting I had run a red light and I know I didn't. It's terrifying, you know. And there are also some pretty solid accusations about how they're profiling and targeting certain people based on what they present like, right? What their race looks like, what their gender looks like, and so on. And as a result, gangs became a huge focal point in the 2022 sheriff election in Los Angeles, because sheriffs are elected. This is where we get a look at the incumbent sheriff, Alex Villanueva, who was very much part of the problem.
Yeah, because Alex said, guys, gangs aren't a problem in the police force. Come on, we solved that. That's done. That's not even an issue anymore. And you're going to call groups of these officers gangs? That is racist. Shame on you.
Yeah. Yeah. Calling them gangs is racist. And they would say stuff like, hey, I'm the first sheriff in over 100 years who speaks fluent Spanish. You guys are racist. You're racist against my people. His people being, of course, the employees of the sheriff's department. Anyway, he lost the election to a guy named Robert Luna. Robert Luna has vowed to tackle the ongoing internal gang issue, this conspiracy. We'll see. But as of last month, January 2023, as we're recording this, Los Angeles decided that Villanueva could not be compelled to cooperate in the new probe of deputy gangs. LA. So good news, LA is doing an investigation. Bad news, they're not requiring the people who could be the most helpful in it to help.
And to be fair, the person who could have been the most helpful is the one who said, this isn't a problem.
Oh, yeah. Right. Exactly. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, as we said at the top, defining a gang can be murky. They are shadow organizations. The ones that we're talking about today certainly don't like the term. But various parts of law enforcement have been called gangs by the public. And in this case, the court of public opinion is basing that definition on the actions that they see in the street by these individuals in these groups. Things like Scorpions in Memphis recently disbanded. Red Dogs in Atlanta disbanded. But there's an interesting little red string we have to connect these two.
Oh, yeah. The string's name is CJ.
Yeah, Sarah Lynn CJ Davis. And if this name sounds familiar, we had mentioned earlier in the show how there was a news hook about the Red Dogs. And Matt, you had mentioned it was kind of as part of another news story that really was sort of the focus. And that was the murder of Tyree Nichols, the same police chief that headed up the Red Dogs in Atlanta, which was disbanded, went on to head up the a very similar type of unit in Memphis during the time where Tyree Davis was murdered. So Cyril and CJ Davis is that string, that red thread that you're talking about, Matt.
Yeah, it's very upsetting. I want to point out here that APD, while Red Dog was disbanded, there is a new unit of a similar style of group, I guess, that's happening right now in Atlanta called the Titan Unit. And there's very little reporting on this unit, what it's doing. We haven't seen anybody, you know, on the ground level, a reporter learning about what the Titan Unit is doing in Atlanta right now. They've been in operation since 2021. If you have information on that, we'd love to hear from you.
Yes, absolutely. Because again, you know, without sounding too cynical, it's almost like, oh, the Burger King has closed and the Sandwich Emperor has opened. It's brand new. It's totally different. Never mind that it's in the same building and the same people work there. You know what I mean? Like it's the name shifting stuff. Very BlackRock, very Academi or XE or whatever they're calling themselves this week. And if the public doesn't hold these organizations accountable to the best of their ability, then there will be no impetus to change because people like power. With this, we want to hear your thoughts. You know, is this, I mean, for a lot of people listening today, these active ongoing conspiracies indicate a need for course correction, right? Maybe better policies can address the problem, can save innocent lives. For others, this is only shining a light on a long-running, terrifying aspect of life in America known all too well by many of our fellow listeners today. I mean, look, since we quoted Goody Mob at the top, why don't we end with Tupac? Not for nothing did Tupac Shakur say police are the biggest gang in America. What do you think about that statement? You know, we're being objective here. We're just giving the facts and tracing the evolution of this conspiracy. But how would you recommend fixing the problem? What's something that more people need to know? We're asking both our conspiracy realists in the crowd who are civilians and our conspiracy realists in the crowd who work in law enforcement themselves. We'd love to hear from you. We try to be easy to find on the internet. I was doing so well. Stumbled on the last part.
Well, if you're an officer, you can just look up our names probably and find our address, as you said, Ben. So just stop
water
by.
Under the bridge.
Stop by
water
and say
under
hey.
The bridge, guys.
That's right. You can find us all over the internet. We are Conspiracy Stuff on Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok. But there's more.
Yes, we have a phone number. It is 1-833-STDWYTK. Put that number in your phone as a contact. Trust us, just do it. And then you can call it whenever you feel like it, especially if you're listening to an episode or if you have an epiphany at 3:04 a.m. You got 3 minutes to leave a message. Give yourself a cool nickname and let us know in the message if we can use your name and voice on the air. If you don't want to do that stuff, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.